Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, the coronavirus pandemic may be increasing the incidence of domestic violence. Officials, like in our region, Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., are mandating that people stay at home. But that could be a perilous order for survivors of domestic violence or those in situations in which they could be likely victims. The forced isolation puts many at risk of physical and emotional abuse. What can be done to protect the vulnerable and reduce the possibility of attacks and emotional distress? Tonight, we focus on those issues and more in our Insight segment. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Dr. Denise McCain. She is director of Prince George's County's Family Justice Center. And Dr. Audrey Chapman, a psychotherapist. Again, the phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. McCain, I want to start with you. Does this shutdown put domestic violence and even child abuse victims at risk?
Good evening, and absolutely it does. Just as you pointed out, when we're looking at a situation where individuals are being told to stay at home, to shelter in place, home is not necessarily a safe haven, and it's potentially more dangerous for victims of domestic violence, simply just by virtue of the fact that they're isolated and they're forced to stay in confinement with individuals for an extended period of time. It means that there's a greater opportunity for abuse to occur. The house is probably a very high-stress environment when you think about forced social isolation, perhaps economic vulnerability, things that are just adding to the stress and the anxiety, which then leads to the element of control. Domestic violence is really about power and control. And when an individual feels that they've lost control, which comes about with anxiety, there are greater opportunities to then use those tactics that are typically used to relieve some of the pressures by using the victim as an outlet for that. So absolutely. And as you mentioned, children are also at much greater risk as well during these times.
And Dr. Chapman, is there a gender imbalance of what we normally think that, and especially if we think about physical abuse, men against women, and then when we get into emotional, is it safe to say that women are more a victim of men, or can that be somewhat different, especially under the times that we're operating with this coronavirus pandemic?
Well, the data shows that women are more apt to be a victim of domestic violence. On the other hand, we know that men do not have the tendency to call the police if something's being thrown at them, hot water, hot food, or, you know, a frying pan in their head or whatever. They're not going to call the police because of the embarrassment of it, humiliation. They're also worried that the police will come and immediately think that they have done something first. And so the tendency to report it is lower with men than it is with women. So we don't know whether the numbers would be almost, the same if more men reported it or not. But the truth is more women report it, so you have more women who are seen as victims of domestic violence. So it does not mean that men do not have people who attack them in their homes and aren't also the victim of emotional abuse, which is what I deal with a lot more, the emotional part of it, where people are cursing each other out, being provocative, calling people out of their name, being very contemptuous with another person, provoking an individual who may suffer from depression and anxiety, who could be bipolar, who could be clinically depressed, who could have generalized anxiety, who could have PTSD. I could go on with the list. Mm-hmm. And you have somebody that's provoking you. It's a short step from being able to manage your feelings and losing it and attacking the other person.
And Dr. Chapman, say you aren't diagnosed with any of those or don't have a pre-diagnosis of that. But under the circumstances, and you mentioned stress, and we see the layoffs. We just, you know, heard about Macy's laying off their folks. We had a story about the symphony orchestra here at the Kennedy Center. Those workers are going to be laid off.
Right.
That kind of stuff that the virus is causing, right? Those ancillary issues. That
the
I'm
uncertainty.
Assuming,
right. That's what it's called. It causes the uncertainty, and the uncertainty is how will I survive? How will I be able to pay my bills? How will I be able to put gas in the car? How will I be able to take care of something the children need? All of those things create uncertainty, which causes the worry and the anxiety and the stress level. And so then you lose sleep. You're not sleeping well. You're on edge. You're irritable. Some people start drinking. I noticed that the liquor stores are open. I don't quite understand that. Mm-hmm. But
that's not an essential item, is it?
But
it's
yet,
not an essential item, and yet the liquor stores are open and they're stocked very well. And the mixture of anxiety, stress, and depression in liquor is volatile.
Well, let me ask Dr. McCain, and you too, Dr. Chapman. But I'll start with you, Dr. McCain. I think a lot of folks, when they heard that, I know I did, and I've talked to people who said, "Well, wait a minute. The restaurants are closed, but yet the liquor stores are open." And we know President Trump has stressed about the economic side of this COVID-19 issue. But what's your opinion or your thoughts on why liquor stores are considered essential, Dr. McCain?
I have no idea. And I can't even imagine a definition whereby alcohol and use of alcohol would be considered essential. I would go back to the point about the drinking and the stress, and I think it's important for people to understand that those are contributing factors, but they're not causal.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is going to be abusive, they're going to be abusive under any circumstance. This anxiety that's associated with the pandemic is increasing the level of or the need for control. And that's what I was speaking of before. The anxiety is associated with just the uncertainty of not knowing what's going on. So when you need to have that control, I even read an article about that's one of the reasons why people go out and hoard and buy toilet paper because of the anxiety. It's something that they feel they can control. It's the same thing with the domestic abusive situation. The survivor, the victim, is that component that they control. So all of these precursors, things that were mentioned, the lack of employment, uncertainty, you know, just things that are that this pandemic has caused, it increases that for those individuals who would be inclined to abuse. But if you're not someone that's going to be abusive, this situation, you handle stress in other ways. Being abusive is not a normal or natural way to handle stress. That would only apply to someone who is abusive.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight, our focus, coronavirus, but domestic violence connected to that. Is it increasing the incidence of domestic violence? So we heard from D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. She was asked today at her press conference whether or not she's seen an increase in calls regarding domestic violence in the district. She says that has been the case. The National Domestic Violence Hotline says they're seeing a steady stream of about 2,000 calls a day, Dr. Chapman. So if you are shut in, if you have Governor Hogan says stay at home unless it's about getting some food, getting medicine, or getting exercise, you have the same thing here in our region from the Virginia governor and the mayor of D.C. is saying that. But say you've been a victim, you're a survivor of domestic violence, and you're feeling isolated, and sort of that anxiety, as you mentioned, sort of kicks in a certain fear. If you live near close to someone who has abused you, what would you suggest? Where do you go? Do you leave the house? Do you make a phone call? Do you ask someone else to come over?
You should probably have some kind of a plan set up. Whether that's a relative or a friend or whatever that you can call and send out a signal. You can even on your cell phone now have a certain ring tone so that that person, when they hear it, knows that the call is coming from you. So you can set it up so that if you feel like that person is, you notice somebody is maybe either driving by your house a lot and you think that they maybe are going to come and cause trouble or something, that you can get a hold of one of your friends or a relative and have them call the police for you so that somebody comes over there and checks it out. You don't have to sit in the house and just, you know, kind of become hysterical and feel totally helpless. You can reach out. So that's one thing. The other thing is that if you're ordered to stay in, and they are saying people can go out to the grocery store or anything that is essential, to the doctors, to things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In my neighborhood, people are out jogging, so they're not saying like 100% you have to stay in there. And maybe
Right. It's
during those times that you let your neighbor or somebody know that you're in trouble, and so that you can get the help that you need and not feel so isolated. Because it's feeling isolated that makes you feel trapped and vulnerable, and that's what creates more of the anxiety and the stress level.
And Dr. McCain, I do think it's important here that I think oftentimes we have so much news that's coming at us just in general, right? And
almost too much,
and especially now with
this
pandemic, you really can get overloaded with information. Mm-hmm. What do I do when they say non-essential? What does that mean? Not everyone is in the business that, you know, we're in, or myself at least, I can speak, and you all too, that you have to know sort of as many things as possible about what's going on. Can folks be so overwhelmed with information that, unlike what Dr. Chapman is saying, you should go out? Sometimes you may hear the governor and the mayor saying, stay home, and you take that literally. How important
Right.
is it to really be as informed as possible, but at the same time, not be overwhelmed sort of with a feeling of doom and gloom by taking in too much of this information? Is it a delicate balance?
Absolutely, and I think that goes for all of us. We are inundated with COVID-19 news stories, you know, from the time you wake up until you go to bed at night. And for anyone, myself included, I thought I had a sore throat last night, and I thought I had a fever, and I started panicking. So, you know, it does have a way of playing on your mind. So I would certainly not encourage anyone, you know, you want to get the information to be aware of, you know, whatever warnings have been put forth, if there's now a lockdown, things of that nature. Certainly you want to be informed, but by no means should anyone, particularly those who are anxious or already feeling trapped, not to do that all day. And I just also want to go back to saying that, you know, being trapped with an abuser, when you talk about safety plans, more often than not, this COVID-19 is a legitimate way to keep a person locked down.
Hmm.
So it's going to be very difficult for them to reach out to family members. Even, you know, Dr. Chapman talked about safety planning, which is certainly something that we always try to do with anyone that comes in for services, because you never know what's going to happen. You want them to be prepared. But I would venture to say that many of those plans would probably not even work now, largely because of so many of the restrictions, particularly if we're talking about travel restrictions. You know, there are limited opportunities for them to really implement some of the things that have been put in place. So I would agree with Dr. Chapman and say perhaps stay in shelter in place, with a family member or a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Also look at making sure, you know, every situation is different. I think that victims of domestic violence, they know their situation best. They know their abusers. They know what those hot button issues are. They know when they're walking on eggshells, when something is about to explode, to try before an argument breaks out to diffuse it. But also, if you can, to find a safe place in the home, because that's extremely important. You don't want to be in a kitchen area or bathroom area where there are hard surfaces or sharp objects. So I would encourage people to stay in a living room, a bedroom, places where there's less at risk for being seriously harmed.
Dr. Mm-hmm. Chapman, also, you know, what's interesting here is many of us in our lines of work are working from home, and this also trickles back to some of these hotlines. You know, I was reading some information where these domestic violence advocacy groups, they've encouraged staff to work from home. So if you are someone who is concerned about domestic violence abuse and you have to call these hotlines, and maybe folks are working from home or teleworking or maybe not at the normal place where they would take these calls, is that something of concern, or is it because we have the technology now where anyone can work from home, it doesn't really make a difference?
Oh, of course it makes a difference. And that's why I was suggesting that you might have some kind of signal that I would think that if you are have been a victim of abuse, that you have talked to somebody that's close to you before this virus thing came about. And you set up some kind of a signal with them. You know, like I said, you can do it very easily with the phone, just setting the phone so that all you do is ring it and they hear the tone, and that's a signal to them that you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then they have to handle it on their end, of course, because you can't have a discussion with somebody that might be even more violent with you in the house. But I would think that before, I mean, what this has been going on now for, what, about 3 weeks? You didn't just meet this person 2 weeks ago. Hopefully, you have talked to somebody, a friend or a relative, before now and given some indication. Maybe you're not telling them the deep degree, but they know that it's not necessarily a good situation for you. And the thing that I would do with a client is to talk to them about how we're going to set up a plan for what could happen, rather than waiting until you're in that situation where you've got to then try to scramble and figure out what to do. But I also think it's important to just have some idea of how to calm down a situation. And I spend a lot of time with couples, and we talk a lot about doing timeout. Mm-hmm. Again, these are couples who are verbally arguing. They are not physically arguing. How to make sure that your lifestyle and your meals are balanced, because there are certain things that kind of can aggravate some people's system and keep them kind of hyped up. Limiting alcohol and caffeine. Caffeine can aggravate your anxiety and trigger panic attacks. Making sure you get enough sleep, because a lot of people are not sleeping right now. I just talked with a client, and she said she's getting only 3 or 4 hours of sleep, whereas before she was getting 7 or 8. Exercise as much as you can. Even if you can't get outside, if you can just walk through the house, if you've got stairs, go up and down the stairs, work with whatever you have in your house.
Dr. Chapman,
learning how to take deep breaths.
I want you to hold
using
your...
an app called Calm. Right. That Dr. app is very
valuable. Dr. Chapman, hold your thought for a second on the resources, not the resources, of things that we can do, because I want to get more into that. But before we go to the other side, I want to make sure our listeners know of some of the resources maybe they can go to if they need help. Any places that you would suggest or sites, Dr. Chapman?
Certainly counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to my website. There's a whole list of people in the metropolitan area, AudreyChapman.com. I would strongly recommend that. And there is a list of domestic violence centers on my website as well.
And Dr. McCain, quickly, if you could give us any sites for the listeners.
Absolutely. I would direct them to the Family Justice Center. That number is 301-780-8008. We are working with 23 organizations, governmental as well as community-based, that are prepared to provide services. So I would certainly start there.
All right. Well, this conversation does not end, but it ends on this side. We're going to continue on the SiriusXM Channel 141 side. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have any suggestions, experiences that might help those who are out there listening, we want to hear from you. So the Daily Drum again will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Angela Stribling is next, 96.3. WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher, and this is the Insight segment. Tonight, we are talking about the issue of domestic violence in connection to the coronavirus. It is causing a lot of stress. Many of us are trying to figure out how to pay the bills, how to take care of the kids, how to feed them. They're home. They're not in school. Keep our relationships strong. Make sure our jobs are still around after the coronavirus passes, and it will pass at some point. But how to do that and keep everything stable? This is a time where experts have said domestic violence incidents are on the rise. We have the statistics that show that. Tonight we're talking about it and how to to keep that under control as best we can. Our guest tonight, Dr. Denise McCain, director of the Prince George's County Family Justice Center, and Dr. Audrey Chapman, a psychotherapist. Our phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to those phone lines with our caller. You're up with your question or comment.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, hi. So I wanted to make 2 points. First, I do agree that the use of alcohol can exacerbate violence towards one partner or the other during stressful times. However, I take issue with the young lady who said that they did not understand what part liquor stores played in this situation and why it was deemed essential. A liquor store is a twofold sort of crutch. It can be a victim's lifeline out of the community. So liquor stores cash checks. They allow you to pay bills. They allow you to become economically mobile. And for marginalized communities, that is important. So say, for instance, if you're in a situation and someone is wiring you money, mm-hmm. you can go to the liquor store and receive the money so that you can make a getaway.
But aren't there other places where you can cash your check? And
when you think about cash checking, mm-hmm. cash checking places, I'm sorry, a lot of times they are not in walking distance of a community.
Mm-hmm.
Liquor stores are right there in the community.
So it sounds like, and tell me your name again. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Stephanie Jackson.
Stephanie. It sounds like, too, and I want to address this with our doctors in the house, that's also a social economic issue, right? That if the liquor store is the main place where those in certain communities can go to cash their checks, is that problematic in itself, Dr. McCain? I'll sort of throw that out at you because I think she might have been referring to your comments.
And again, I think, as you pointed out, I certainly understand and would, you know, recognize that that may be an option for someone to go and get a check cash. But as was stated, it's not the only location. I don't necessarily think that, again, as the question was posed, how that is an essential item. Alcohol in and of itself is not an essential item, and that was the question. Whether or not the service that's being provided at the store is something that would be beneficial to a survivor or a victim is another issue. But again, I would still say that would not be the only place that a check could be cashed. I do agree, as was pointed out by the caller, that there are perhaps more liquor stores that are readily available in communities as opposed to check cashing places. But again, if we're talking about the need for items that are essential, my statement was directed to that alcohol was not necessarily an essential item during this time.
All right. Dr. Chapman, thank you so much, Stephanie, for your call.
I agree with the doctors. I don't have anything to add to it. I agree with what she just said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it may have been a little bit misunderstood. Our discussion may have been misinterpreted a little bit.
Right.
But I certainly agree with the essence of what she was saying.
Dr. Chapman, let's, if we can, sort of talk about children in these situations and sort of where they fall. We know that they are home from school. You know, mine are, but I have teenagers, so they can kind of, you know, make their own way. So that's a blessing sometimes and a problem because they're like, you know, I want to go somewhere where kids
can get more feedback from teenagers.
Exactly right. A little person, you can say, oh, go over here and take a nap. But
right.
still, right?
Right.
Talk about
children need routine.
Right. And I was going to say that.
And their routine is all messed up now. You know,
mm-hmm.
they need order. And they need routine, and they need to know that things are going to happen at a certain time throughout the day. This is why schools are so regimented.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that has been thrown out the window. Now, I know some of those schools are doing online teaching, so there's probably a certain amount of time that they're supposed to be in front of the computer. But it's starting to get boring for kids,
mm-hmm.
and they they really need socialization. That's another important part of being a child. And so they miss not being able to chat with their friends and go outside and play, you know, ball or whatever it is that they generally, or play in the schoolyard, and or, you know, have a break for lunch and whatever. They miss all of that.
Right. But Dr. Chapman, with that, and for all of us who've had kids, and even if you haven't had kids, had to be around them, you know, for any length of time, when you have children in the house with parents who also can't, you know, go into work, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're talking about sort of a domestic violence, whether it's emotional or physical, and we're not mm-hmm. just talking about adult on adult. We can be talking about adult to child or child to child, right?
Yes. And so, an adult that loses it with a child.
Because right.
your child won't do whatever you want them to do, mm-hmm. like go and do their schoolwork or go and watch a TV show. They just want to be all up under you.
Right.
Or they're fighting with each other.
Well, that's what I was going to say, kids to kids. So all of this, and I guess, you know, the operative word here also sort of is stress, which is the trigger, mm-hmm. right, for these emotional and physical violence. So this is...
Mm-hmm. This is why I've seen, and I have been in different areas, I've seen parents... walking the kids. So the kids are running in front of them. The parents are actually behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they want them to run some of this energy off
right.
and get them to do that. I've seen a lot of kids playing with balls and also bicycles. Again, that's more getting energy out. And in the house, you know, you've got to keep them occupied with either things to read or things on TV or on the computer or ordering movies.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff has got to take place. And some young people are doing group chats with each other because they find that to be fun, where they're coming together and they're talking about something, or they are playing games. So someone told me the other day they were going to play card games on a video
mm-hmm.
Conferencing. All of these things are what you have to try to do to keep each other occupied and to not get bored and not try to use your parents as people who you are, you know, like a sounding board that you vent and try to, you know, get some of your frustration off on, because your parents are also frustrated. So you have to work with the parents have to work with the children, but the parents also have to work with their stress level.
Right.
That's why it's so important. Some parents have gyms and some equipment. I've been talking to people and I ask them, do you have anything in the house that you can use for exercise? And some people happen to have a bike. Some people have a treadmill. Some people don't have any of that. Some
mm-hmm.
people have weights. But whatever you have, try to also use that, because you've got to also work off some of your stress.
Right.
So that you can then deal with the children.
I would just like to add
sure,
to
Dr.
that, as mm-hmm. we're speaking about children, particularly that are in abusive homes,
mm-hmm.
And 90% of the incidences, children are witnessing an abuse. They're witnessing that, and that has very...
That's traumatizing.
It has very... Exactly. It has very significant long-term and short-term implications. Mm-hmm. And for a parent who is also dealing with stress, time has to be made to sit down with the child, try to help them process what's going on, because it will be even more traumatizing if it's ignored, which is what happens frequently. And I think if you're in a situation as we are now, where there aren't as many outlets and resources for people to get help, it will be more important for a parent, a caretaker, to ensure that the child's well-being, because children are the silent victims. They're often forgot about. They go to a room, you think they don't hear, but children are very present, and they do understand what's going on. And it's equally as damaging, if not more so, for a young child to not have a way of having someone help them understand and explain what's going on.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our topic tonight, domestic violence in connection with the coronavirus pandemic. Everyone's sort of being cooped up in the home, in a space, even if you're by yourself, isolated. Maybe you've been a victim, unfortunately, of domestic violence. You're home alone. What does that mean? Does that create sort of more stress, that isolation? Our guest tonight, Dr. Denise McCain, director of Prince George's County's Family Justice Center, and Dr. Audrey Chapman, a psychotherapist. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines now. And Shirley is on the line. Go right ahead with your Cherie, I'm sorry, with your question or comment.
Hi. My comment is that I just wanted to offer for those of us that are essential workers, including myself as a last responder, because I'm in the funeral and cemetery industry, and things are changing for us daily. So it's stressful for everyone, whether it's parents, your coworkers, managers. And I just wanted to offer for families to use the resource of the EAP hotlines that many employers offer. That's a free resource to families as well.
What does that stand for, Cherie? EAP?
Well, most places, EAP stands for Employee Assistance Program.
Mm-hmm.
And I know most of the federal employees as well as private sector have those hotlines as part of your free resources.
Mm-hmm.
So families can call. It's usually a 1-800 number and get some different resources, whether it be financial resources, coping with stress, wellness, those things. So just wanted to offer that for those that are teleworking, or if you have to go out because you're essential, to use those resources as well.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Cherie. We appreciate that. And that's what we're looking for, either your own personal stories or if you have information for those out there who can use it to their advantage. And we appreciate that. Thank you so much, Cherie. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. Dr. McCain, we were talking about kids. Let's talk a little, if we can, about age and the issue of domestic violence and where it falls in terms of age. Are we talking middle age? We're talking about those who are in their 20s, different concerns for the elderly and the possibility of that under sort of these stressful situations. Is there a different approach depending on age? We've sort of talked about the small children, but let's sort of move up a little bit higher.
Well, first and foremost, I think it's important to note that there are no age barriers for domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone at any age could be a victim. Statistically, we know the majority of victims are women, as was stated earlier, and they generally fall within the age range of 18 to 24. We see women of all ages. More recently, we have started seeing women in their 50s. And when you do take into account elderly who are also victimized generally by family members, they do have extra concerns because those are their caretakers. And they're less mobile oftentimes. They have less access to resources, the ability to get out or to even speak to people. And there's a great deal of fear there. Even if they could, they're afraid to speak out because they're of the ramifications, the consequences as to what will be done to them afterwards. So we do have to take extra care when we're thinking about older victims of domestic abuse because they do have very different challenges. When we talk about, of course, their teens, but I think with the shutdown that was just implemented or the lockdown, you know, there will be more controls to some extent, but then we have to also think about the social media. Teens are abused via, you know, social media, Facebook, all of those types of mediums. So I think it would be important for parents to also step in and make sure that they're paying attention to what's going on with their teens. They have access to technology, which is still a tool for abuse. So that's another area to think about. So again, it runs the gamut from one age and one extreme to the other.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. Phone lines are still open. We'd love to hear from you, your suggestions, your comments, advice regarding sort of these stay-at-home mandates that are coming down, especially in the Washington metropolitan area and really all across the nation now, what that means for those in the issue of domestic violence and to take care of those who are vulnerable. 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We will continue this conversation right after this break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, and for Harold Fisher, this is the Insight segment. Tonight we are focusing on, as we have, and cannot get around it, the coronavirus and all of the tentacles, things that are sort of offshoots of that. And tonight our focus around coronavirus is domestic violence and what the pandemic has done in terms of having folks around each other daily in small, sometimes tight spaces, and also those who are home alone, those who may have been victims of domestic violence, what that's like being home. And if there are victims, are they seeking the help that they could possibly get that is out there for them? Our guest tonight, Dr. Denise McCain, director of the Prince George's County Family Justice Center, and Dr. Audrey Chapman, a psychotherapist. The phone lines are still open. Have a little bit more time for you to get in your call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Chapman, I want to follow up on something you said a while back when we were talking about the children being home and the things that you can do with them and sort of what they can find to do. In Prince George's County, they have closed the schools, obviously, until the end of April, but yet they are not requiring online schooling because they recognize that many of the children may not have computers.
Right.
So in that instance, for kids who are home, some may not have computers. I know one day I went to get some books for my kids from the library, and that particular day in Prince George's County, the library had closed, so you really couldn't get books. So when we were talking about the socioeconomic issue, is that sort of also part of it when we're talking
about...
Well,
it does play a role, and right. And that was one of the things, I think, when they started talking about shutting down the schools, mm-hmm. that a lot of the experts talked about, that there in some neighborhoods... the children aren't going to have access to computers because they may not have them. They have them in school, but they don't have them at home. Now, I do know in some areas they were going to loan the laptops to certain neighborhoods and stuff for mm-hmm. children who don't have them. But in those cases, you know, you may even have parents who aren't particularly motivated to sit down with the kids and try to, you know, have them read or do some math or something on that order. So the kids pretty much are left to kind of fend for themselves, which is why they are often stressful to the parents because it's particularly if it's siblings, they tend to end up, you know, getting on each other's nerves and teasing each other mm-hmm. and harassing each other, and now you have little fights going on amongst them as well. So it becomes problematic for the parents. But I think that there are some, there's an awareness that all neighborhoods don't have access to computers, and there was a discussion about how they could get some technology to some of those children so that they would be able to do some work by computer. But I don't know how that's going. I haven't heard a lot of feedback about that, but I do remember hearing a discussion about it.
And Dr. McCain, I know you had mentioned earlier about children in the environment of domestic violence and how they see that and the emotional trauma from that. Can you talk a little bit about just the fact that schools are closed, if you have children who are sort of in an environment where there is sort of that constant domestic violence, whether it's physical or mental, the situation where, would you agree that in many ways a school is a safe place for those kids? And now
Absolutely.
With not having that, that mm-hmm. just makes it even a more dire situation brought on by this pandemic?
Absolutely, and in two ways. First and foremost, as you pointed out, it is a safe haven. It's an opportunity for a child to speak out, to speak to someone, a teacher, a counselor, a friend. It's also an opportunity for teachers who ideally are trained and recognize what some of the signs are. As I mentioned, you know, if you see children in school who are suddenly withdrawn, they're unable to concentrate, they're sleeping, or they're acting out in other ways, those are generally indicators that something else is going on at home. By not having that outlet for children to now be trapped in the home, there's no one to even see
or to give the help that they could potentially need, and realistically, even help save the parent, the victim.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about other areas, you know, reaching out to people, but there have been instances when teachers have been able to identify based upon what they've seen, or children have just disclosed what's going on in home, which then led, you know, unfortunately, Child Protective Services would get involved, but there were then interventions put in place, which ultimately saved the child, but also the parent. So not having the opportunity to be in school does have very serious implications for children.
Dr. Chapman, how...
And not being able to also have, at best, two good meals a day also,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is very important for children being able to cope during this time.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Chapman, what would you say as a psychotherapist to say a person who has been a victim of domestic violence, and we have these reports that some have been reluctant to go to emergency rooms because they may have a pre-existing condition and they makes them vulnerable to the coronavirus, so they don't want to go to the hospital, feeling that they might contract the virus at a clinic. What would you say to
those?
Well,
you really get, I mean, if you're in a, and I want to keep saying that the majority of the people I work with are not in a domestic violence situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sort of on the end of trying to prevent it by giving people tools, how to manage anger,
right,
how to deal with stress, that kind of stuff, get in front of it ahead of time. However, the few women that I have seen that have come in that kind of situation, they have very damaged self-esteem, which we've not said a whole lot about.
Okay.
Their self-esteem has been damaged. They have a lot of self-doubt about themselves. They have a lot of fear. They tend to isolate to protect themselves because they don't want anybody to see the bruises and the marks on them, whatever. And so it is very hard for them to reach out and to go out. And particularly in this kind of a situation, if they had to get to the emergency room for something, they wouldn't want to have known that to the professional people who are in the emergency rooms that they have been abused.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's not as easy for them to let people know that they're dealing with something. Along with the health piece, they're also dealing with the physically abused piece.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them have PTSD also, so from all the trauma that they are experiencing.
But I think it's also important to note that even abusers, this is something that an abuser would also use to control a victim,
mm-hmm,
by giving them misinformation or telling them, frightening them about the pandemic, not letting them go.
Right.
So it's not even a matter of them choosing not to or being fearful. They may not be able to.
Hmm.
And or have been told that if they go, you know, they're going to contract the virus, and things to keep them in place. Again, this is really about power
control.
And control.
Yeah.
So whatever tactics can be used, you know, holding on to their insurance cards or threatening to cancel insurance, things that make it difficult for them to even attempt to get medical assistance if they needed it. So these are not normal situations. We're not talking about, you know, normal relationships. We're talking about very dysfunctional situations with people who are, their one priority is to maintain control over a person and by any means necessary. So if the pandemic is something now to be frightened about, you need to get help. Well, guess what? I'm not going to let you out to do that. I'm going to frighten you even more, so you'll want to stay here.
So, and these are definitely not normal times, but we are so appreciative of having experts like you, Dr. McCain, Dr. Denise McCain, Director of the Prince George's County Family Justice Center, and Dr. Audrey Chapman, psychotherapist who tries to get ahead instead of behind of this issue. And we appreciate both of you sort of bookending that and offering your expertise. A fabulous conversation. Thank you so much. And we thank all of our callers tonight for their questions and their comments and their advice. That will do it for us tonight on The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, March 30th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.